Okay, everyone, welcome. And we're going to do the usual Saturday meditation. We're going to talk a little bit about meditation first of all, and then get into the practice in a few minutes' time. And always in meditation, it's kind of very simple. It's simple yet difficult. It's a weird kind of combination. It's simple, but it's kind of to make the process work is not always obvious. And there's always two aspects that I like to kind of focus on in meditation that shows that the meditation is going well. And one aspect is the peace of the mind, and the other aspect is the joy or the happiness of the mind. And both of these need to develop in parallel for the meditation really to take off. The peace side of things is is one aspect. The other aspect is the joy side. When there are various obstacles in the mind, things that we call like the hindrances, the joy is a very powerful way of overcoming those hindrances. So for instance, you have the problem, the hindrance of tiredness or whatever, which I feel now because of a bit of jet lag and a bit of cold and various things kind of affecting me at the same time. And what you have to do when you feel a bit tired or lethargic, joy, of course, is a very powerful antidote to those things, because joy wakes you up. Joy wants to make you present. Not only does it want to make you present, but if you are joyful, the mind also tends to settle down. It's not so restless anymore, because restlessness really arises from the idea that you want to find happiness somewhere else. You want to search somewhere else for something interesting. That's why the mind gets restless. And if you are happy and joyful, then there's no need to search anywhere else for all the positive aspects of meditation. And the Buddha lays down a large number of ways in which to give rise to joy. One of the things I was talking about yesterday during the Dhamma talk was the qualities of these teachings of the Buddha and how unique they are in the world. There's nothing really like these teachings anywhere else. They're really special on so many different levels and in so many different ways. And that in itself is kind of sufficient, in a sense, to rejoice. The idea of just thinking about these teachings and how special they are. But not only are they special, but they lead also to all of these things, that all the things that we ever dreamt of and things that we never dreamt of at all these positive things in our life really come from these Dhamma teachings. And one of the ways of thinking about the Dhamma is, I mentioned yesterday, is the world's greatest self-help book. It is about self-help because the Buddha points the way. The Buddha says, I have found this, made this amazing discovery, and if you follow the same path, if you do it yourself, then you will actually have the same kind of results. But it is a self-help book with a twist, because it is a self-help that actually leads to the highest kind of positive outcome we can possibly wish for. Another way of thinking about the Dhamma is as a treasure map. In the suttas, the Buddha says that what we are looking for is a bit like a treasure. The Buddha says that we are trying to discover almost like gold, in a sense. And if someone gives you a treasure map towards some kind of interesting treasure, there's an X on this map, and there's a path to get there, it makes you kind of interested, it makes you excited, it brightens the mind up, because you're kind of discovering something really extraordinary here. And yet the treasures of the world, the ordinary treasures, are nothing compared to the treasure of the Dhamma. Because the treasures of the world, whatever it might be, is always transient, is always unreliable, it's always uncertain. How long you're going to be able to hold on to it or whatever. But the treasure of the Dhamma has a much more permanent aspect to it. Once you get there, it is kind of yours, and it lasts, it doesn't stop. And it's also incredibly valuable, because it concerns the very meaning of life itself. It's about abandoning all the potential suffering in the world, which is enormous according to the suttas. But it's also at the same time about finding the highest treasure you can possibly find, the greatest happiness, the purpose, the meaning, the aim, the goal of life itself is really what you discover on this path. So we're on this treasure hunt, and the Dhamma is the treasure map. Yeah. And we're on this extraordinary journey to something really, really interesting. Yeah. And all we have to do is diligently follow the instructions in the suttas. They're very detailed. They're very beautiful with lots of amazing similes. You can see that the mind behind this, the Buddha's mind, is itself something extraordinary. And it's actually very remarkable to be the disciple of someone with such extraordinary ability to teach and such extraordinary insight into the human condition. And now, today, we still have that map to that extraordinary treasure. So sometimes just by reflecting a little bit like this, you can give rise to a sense of uplift in the mind, a sense of feeling that you have something really extraordinary in your life that is very, very difficult to get hold of. And when we have that, then of course we should practice accordingly and move towards this goal that the Buddha said is available to each one of us. Okay, so let's try to do some meditation together. So just as always, get into this nice routine whereby just starting out with just making sure the body is comfortable. And once the body is comfortable, close your eyes and feel the body. And by feeling the body in these various ways, make sure that you are at ease, there are no tensions, and you kind of relax to the max. As the old saying goes, and the more you can relax, the more at ease the mind becomes, and that is where the meditation can really happen. Thank you. And it is so important to enjoy this process of meditation. Whatever you do, just find that groove where you are at ease, comfortable, feeling good about yourself, feeling a sense of inner positivity, while at the same time being comfortable and at ease. When these things come together, then meditation becomes possible. Don't fall into the trap of making this into a slightly torturous path, because there's no way you're going to be able to just be here and now. And then when you find that ease of the body and the mind, then also remind yourself that you don't really have an interesting future. The future in the world is just more of the same. If you want to make the future, you don't think about it. You enjoy the meditation right here and now. That is how you create a good future. So let the future be. The future is not interesting. What is interesting is what you do, what you create, the karma, if you like, that you make here and now, just by enjoying sitting here. Nothing more than that is really required. and to give your meditation a bit more of a boost, a bit of an uplift, you can try this recollection of the Dhamma, this idea that the Dhamma is like a treasure map to the greatest treasure that any human being can ever find or ever discover, something extraordinary that has to do with the meaning of life itself. And we are handed that map by the Buddha. It's in our hands, and all we have to do is to follow along. This is the gift from the Buddha to the world. What an extraordinary thing that we happen to be on that path. We have that map in our hands, and all we have to do is to follow along. What a wonderful thing that is. Okay, so coming close to the end, and if you wish, just take a few moments at the very end to evaluate your meditation. Try to understand what works on this path and what does not work. Okay, everyone, so there you are. Any comments or questions, please just fire away now. Great, thank you. Okay, so we have a few questions from outside, as usual, and first person, Gabi from Germany. Hello, Wolfram. When meditating and body and mind are tight and tense due to chronic pain, how to get calm and peace? Do I put my awareness on the breath or the body? To relax. Patience is harder. I think you putting the awareness on the breath, you can do that, but usually putting the awareness on the breath may, if it works for you, you can do it, but very often you need to kind of try to establish that mindfulness first of all, and otherwise it can be very difficult to kind of follow the breath in a natural and a good way. You need that kind of space in the mind, that sense of distance, sense of not holding on to the breath. And that can only really happen through the mindfulness meditation or through the awareness becoming stronger. So ideally you want the awareness to be stronger, even, you know, even if there is pain and problems in the body. But it is difficult to always, when you have pains and problems in the body, makes it obviously harder, much harder. And that is always a big challenge for people with these kind of things. I'm not sure what the best answer is to this kind of question. I'm sure that you have heard many kind of suggestions before, but sometimes there are medications that you can use that don't interfere too much with your awareness. And if there is medication, use medication. Don't be afraid of medication. Don't think not using medication is some kind of Buddhist thing that we do. It's okay to use these things. If we have the good karma to have these things available, then use them. Apart from that, maybe what you can do is try to put your attention precisely on those things that give rise to joy. Because joy is a very powerful draw in meditation. And when you're drawn to something powerful and beautiful, then the other things tend to fall away because of that. So giving rise to joy is always powerful, regardless. If that becomes difficult, perhaps even placing attention on the pain itself and somehow trying to dissolve it by watching it. Is another technique that I know sometimes is used by people who have chronic pain. But I don't think there is any easy way around these things. And you're just going to have to try to experiment and maybe sometimes ask other people who have, in a similar situation, how they have dealt with it. Obviously there are some skillful ways there. Okay. Next one. This is from Tim. E.D. Tim. From Indonesia. How did we develop joy in meditation for beginners so that we are inspired to meditate without feeling like it is something we must do in order to find peace? Yes, so this is kind of what a lot of the meditation is about, this idea of joy. The first thing to do is just to learn the simple joys of just being peaceful, or sitting down, not doing anything. The feeling that you are not always restless, running around things in the world, understanding the pain that is in that restlessness, and just feeling the sense of not doing anything. That in itself is actually a kind of happiness. Just sitting back, relaxing, feeling the ease of not doing. Doing is kind of a pain, because doing is related to restlessness and agitation and moving all the time, the mind being depleted of energy because of all the activity. And sitting still has the opposite effect. It builds up the energy of the mind. It actually feels really nice once you start to become peaceful. So try to see that happiness right there in meditation. That is a beginning point. Enjoy the meditation. This is why it is so important not to sit with too much pain, because it's very hard to enjoy meditation when you are torturing yourself at the same time. So try to avoid the torturing aspect of things. Then build up some of these beautiful ideas that the Buddha talks about in terms of how to develop joy. And these are the things that we talk about during these meditation sessions. And a very simple way of doing that is just to rejoice in the fact that you are on this path. The fact that you are part of a community of Buddhists who are all practicing this way. The fact that you have all of these Kalyanamittas, not just in Indonesia, but around the world. What an amazing thing that is, that we have this network of Buddhists, people supporting each other, everyone practicing in the same way, making the path available for each other. Isn't that kind of extraordinary? The Buddha is there at the head of everything, and then you have the monastics who practice fully, and then you have the lay community, lay people. All of these things together makes this path very interesting and powerful. So this is how you can give rise to a sense of joy, the gratitude for being part of this, etc., etc., etc. All of these things coming together. Then we have a question from Elsie Kobilia K. Sinia. I'm not sure if I pronounced that correct, but anyway, from Indonesia. Ajahn, when I am tired, it is hard for the mind to stay focused on the breath. I get upset because I can't focus and keep sleeping on meditation. Any advice about this? If you are tired, it may not be the best time to meditate, right? If you are tired, then do something else, first of all. Do something to get some energy back. Maybe rest for a while. Maybe go to sleep for a while, to relieve yourself of that tiredness. Find another time to meditate. Sometimes the best time to do meditation can be early morning, before you do anything else. A lot of people I know have a success by meditating early in the morning, and that's when they find the most peaceful and quiet and clarity of the mind at that particular time. You get up, maybe you do a few things, just to kind of get the sleep out of your mind, and then you can do some meditation right there, and then that can be very powerful. Of course, if you come home from work after a long day and you're tired, then often you have to do a gradual descent into meditation. Start off coming home, sit down for a while, have a nice cup of tea, do a bit of walking around, read something nice, something interesting, listen to some calming music even, or some chanting or whatever it is that kind of turns you, is useful for you. And then gradually calm down and allow the tiredness to dissipate. And then you can do the meditation after a while. Be wise about it. Know the mind states that are conducive to meditation. Don't try to meditate at the wrong time. Get rid of the worst kind of defilements, and then meditation may be possible. Then we have a question from Jornam. Dear Ajahn, how can I make sure I don't forget in the long term that the treasure of the Dhamma is the most important? Thank you. This is Joram from the Netherlands. The way to not forgetting it is to keep on listening to Dhamma talks, keep on reading the suttas and knowing the word of the Buddha. And the more you get into the word of the Buddha, the more you kind of listen to these teachings, the more you get kind of conditioned to make these teachings, to make them the most important thing in your life. It's really about this conditioning process. And as you do that, it is through the listening to these teachings that you give rise to confidence and faith. That's where it comes from, because you start to realize that there's something very profound and important going on here. So keep on coming back to these teachings again and again and again. And as you do so, you will gradually understand the treasure that is there, the greatest treasure in the world. No treasure, that's why we call this the three gems, the triple gem. The Dhamma is one of the triple gems. It's this amazing treasure. Nothing is comparable in the whole world to the Dhamma. And you start to understand that as you gradually uncover this. Then we have a question from Germany again, Sibyl from Germany. Dear Ajahn, could you please share some of your reflections after the meditation? Okay, so after the meditation, the idea at the end is to try to look back on the process you have been through and try to understand why that process works. And you will find that sometimes the meditation works, sometimes it does not, and sometimes it's kind of flat, it's kind of neither works nor does not work. And we need to uncover why it works sometimes. And what this does, it helps you to understand things like, what does it really mean to let go? That's kind of one of these things that sometimes is difficult. We say to ourselves, let go, let go. And of course, that's the last thing you should do. That's the opposite of letting go, forcing the letting go. You start to understand what it means to really relax. How do you relax? How do you let go in this way? So you come back out of the meditation, you look back, and you start to see, well, that's what letting go means. Actually, it's really simple. It just means sitting back, doing nothing. That's what I did. That was letting go. Okay, now I get it. And this is kind of the purpose of reflection afterwards. Or sometimes you will see that there are some, you have the ability to give rise to joy. What did I do today that gave rise to joy? Why did joy come about this time, not previously? And you understand how these basic qualities that make meditation possible, how they arise through using your mind in the right way. It's actually very simple usually. It's very basic things. There's nothing fancy. So when you reflect on these things, understand the very simple ideas that actually help you in the right way. And then that's when you become kind of the, you have the ability to look after your own meditation. All right, that is all for today. So let's just pay respect to the Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha.